another episode of Currently Binging, the podcast about all things TV and movies. If you're listening for the first time, welcome. Make sure you hit that subscribe button in whatever platform you're listening to my voice on. Also, take a few extra seconds to rate, comment, all greatly appreciated. So we are discussing season one, I feel like this is a limited series, of Apples Never Fall. This is a series that is based on the book by the same name by Leanne Moriarty, and we are very familiar with her because we have discussed on this podcast, or I have discussed on this podcast, some of her previous shows, including Big Little Lies and Nine Perfect Strangers. So, I mean, if you're familiar with Leanne, then you know what you're going to get. A lot of just secrets. Like, everybody got secrets. Trust no one, essentially, is how you go into these things. So, I had previously read Big Little Lies and Nine Perfect Strangers. I did not read this Apples Never Fall. I didn't even know anything about it until I saw a commercial or a promo for the show, and I was like, oh, that seems like it could be interesting. So it dropped on Peacock, all 7 episodes of it. And I mean, spoiler alert, but not really, because this whole episode is spoilers. So hopefully you watched, but spoiler alert, like, I really don't think we're getting the second season of this. This is kind of similar to Nine Perfect Strangers, where even though Nine Perfect Strangers, I think we did get to seasons, or we get another season or something like that. I would need to go back. But even Big Little Lies, like, that technically should not have gotten additional seasons, but it did. But like, her books, Leanne's books, especially when people adapt them to the TV screen, they tell like a complete full story that I never finish the series and then be like, oh, I want more, or what else could happen. It feels like a fully complete story. And that was the case with this one. Even watching this, sitting there, I was like, oh, I don't think we're going to get another season of this. But you know, as with everything, if people watch it, which I'm not sure how this did on Peacock, because this released March 14th. I literally just watched this like a week ago, because I didn't even realize that it had already dropped, because I saw that promo and I was like, oh, file it away. But then when I went and looked on Peacock, it was like, oh, it's already available. I was like, oh, okay. So I'm not sure how it did on Peacock. And I feel that way about a lot of Peacock shows, to be completely honest. The only one that I think actually performs well, at least season one did, and I'm assuming season two did because I got a season three, is Bel Air. Of like, I'm talking about the things that I watch, but you all know, like, I have my other shows that I've watched on Peacock that have not been renewed. There's also one show that was, I believe, on Peacock that is now moving to Netflix, or some kind of like deal with Netflix where it's going to show on both of them. And that one I recently talked about, I want to say in like December or something like that, about the girl who ends up getting killed at school and she doesn't know who killed her, but her like spirit is stuck at the school with all the other spirits of people who have died at the school. I cannot remember the title of that show, but hopefully you know what I'm talking about. But either way, I feel like most things don't get renewed or have a short-lived lifespan on Peacock. So yeah. One of Us is Lying, that's my other show, because that one got 2 seasons. Technically, there are like 3 books, so I was like, we should have got 3 seasons, even though they kind of veered off from the books. But I feel like there was still more to tell there, but they canceled that. So performance-wise, I'm not sure how this did, especially considering I didn't even hear it or know anything about it until after it was already released on Peacock. Which, again, I know I'm ragging on Peacock a little bit right now, and having y'all are probably like, get to the show. But I just feel like they're horrible at like promoing their shows, unless it's like a big movie that was like in theaters and is going to be available on Peacock only. I feel like they're really good at shouting that through the rooftop. But their original shows outside of Bel Air, and I feel like It's also the cast as well, because the Bel-Air cast is pretty good, and also it's like Will Smith, so like everyone's gonna know. But like outside of that, they're really horrible at promoting their original series. They just really are. And they do have some actually good shows on air, and it's just really sad because I feel like more of their shows would have a little bit more leg room if they promoted it well. But anyway, let's get into the show, because I mean it's only 7 episodes, so not too much to dig into here. But overall, this was pretty much about a mom who was sick of her kid's shit. Was oblivious like the whole time watching this as we're going through the episodes, because each episode is kind of focused on semi-focus, I want to say, because they don't like only focus on them. You still kind of see some of the other storylines, but each title of each episode is one of our characters in this book. So as you're like, or in this book, I mean it is a book, but on the show, in the show, so as you're going through each character and learning more of them, and it's like, are any of them even really capable of killing? And also setting up Stan pretty early on just seems like too on the nose, and you all know how I feel about exposing a potential victim, super, or not victim, suspect super early. Usually when they do that, it means it's not them. So it was just weird that it was just weird that everyone was like, oh, he killed him or whatever. So anyway, but as we started to go through it, I was like, okay, I feel like this lady is still alive, because it was clear that Savannah, the girl who just showed up, which we're gonna talk about that, because so many red flags, don't understand. But it was clear that Savannah was involved in some way, shape, or form. It was just like, okay, what is this? It was either she swiped her purposely and she had her hold off somewhere, or what's her name, Joy, was just out here oblivious. And it was at, I want to say, at first I was like, okay, it feels like maybe Joy like set this all up because her family is trash. And you could tell that she felt some type of way, like she felt like a lonely older mom whose all of her kids have left the nest, and she no longer has a job, and she's kind of trying to figure out like a job that occupies her time. So she's trying to figure out like what does her day-to-day look like, and her kids don't really want to spend that time with her. And so you can see that. And so initially it's like, okay, did she set this up? And it was like, oh, I'm gonna frame my husband or one of my kids. But also it just doesn't feel like her personality to frame someone for her murder and have them go to jail. So I'm trying to find where this is. Oh, literally as soon as episode 7 started, because all through this, I was like, I feel like this is set up. I feel like this is set up. So by the time we get through Stan's episode, which is like, yes, this is feeling very set up-y, I was like, okay, because I had a few theories. It was either one of them killed her for real, most likely her husband, because I just can't see any of the kids doing it. Savannah murdered her, or it was a setup. Then as soon as episode 7 started, and she's back on this bike, because we open up the series with her on the bike, and then we close out the beginning of the final season, or final season, final episode of her on this bike. I literally wrote in my notes, because you all know I take my notes. I literally wrote in my notes, could also be that Joy is oblivious, because she just gives oblivious personality. And essentially, that was what it was. So this whole time, Savannah had her, because Savannah is a smart girl. So she kind of semi-kidnapped her, because she was like trying to cut her off from all communications. Like she literally cut the cord to the phone so she couldn't call anyone. And was also about to straight up murder her toward the end. Savannah was a crazy character. Crazy character. In a sea of crazy characters, but wild. She was wild. And then I was like, okay, so she kidnapped her and Joy has no clue. And then she finally started to realize, okay, wait, I'm in danger. And a little bit too late. And this always kind of like grinds my gears, if you will. is when people like know that they're in danger or know that someone is the culprit in whatever situation that they find themselves in, and instead of holding that information tight to the chest, which I feel like Joy tried to do a little bit, but then Savannah picked up that she like knew what was going on and wanted to go home when they were in the car. But because I was just watching something else, I can't even remember what it was I was watching, but it's just like you hold that stuff close to your chest. Oh, was it oh my gosh. Because I'm also watching, there's a couple of things I'm watching right now, or just finished watching. I'm watching Under the Bridge as well. I feel like this happened in there. But either way, you people know that you did something, or you know that someone did something, and instead of holding it close to your chest and not saying anything and not making them aware that you know and exposing what you know, they just blurt it out or they say whatever, or they try to corner that person, and then they find themselves dead or in some type of situation that they can't get themselves out of. It's very, very irritating. But Joy finally comes through and she gets home and it's like, girl, your husband was in jail because they done out here done blamed him for your murder. Couldn't find your body, got him on camera literally dumping something, which was like, Stan, why did you pick that night? First of all, why is that the avenue you went through to get rid of the trophies that you were yet holding on to? If I'm trying to get rid of something, my first thought is not going to be, oh, let me put it in a tarp-like bag, load it onto a speedboat that is not mine, that I'm literally breaking into my son's place of business after hours to steal the boat, because essentially that's what you're doing. And I'm going to go dump this black tarp-like bag into the middle of the ocean. Like, who, why was that the path? I don't understand. So he already out here looking guilty and suspect, and then his own kids think he's guilty, and like the kids straight up savage kids. So there are four of them. Oh my gosh, there's, and it took, because I'm watching this, I'm like trying to figure out the order of the siblings, because you all know I love, like, this is one of those shows where it's like, oh, the sibling moments, the friends moments, like all that. Like, there wasn't really a lot of that in here, but I do like that. And so also just trying to figure out like who kind of gravitates to who, what is the order as far as oldest to youngest. So it was pretty clear immediately that, what's her name? Is it Brooke? Or no, Amy. Yeah, it was pretty clear that Amy and Troy were the oldest. Who of the two were the oldest? I was leaning towards Troy because he was given like the oldest sibling, and then also we had that flashback of them when they were kids, and he was on the tennis court with Stead, and like you can clearly see like he was the oldest because the other kids were watching. But then when you get to Logan and you get to Brooke, that was where I was like, okay. Who was the youngest? Because I felt like it could have went either way, because it was given like sometimes it was given like Logan was the youngest, and then sometimes it was given like Brooke was the youngest, because you can also see a little bit of pairing up as well, because like Brooke and Logan kind of naturally gravitate towards each other. Troy and Amy, in their own weird way, were giving off older siblings who want to act like they don't gravitate towards each other. But potentially when push comes to shove, like they're the ones that they're going to gravitate to. But where did I write it down? I'm pretty sure Logan ends up being the one who is the youngest. This is the hard part about taking all these notes, because then I start talking through it and it's like, oh wait, who's the youngest? Taking a long time to be the youngest. I'm pretty sure it's Logan. But either way, and it took forever until like episode six. It was when if they when I think I don't know who says it, but one of them, I want to say it was Brooke or whoever, was like, "Oh, you're my baby brother or whatever." So yeah, so all the kids, Amy was giving just. I literally wrote for Amy. There is clearly something wrong with Amy. Like, girl was just living in La La Land. And like, as you start to explore kind of her background, because all these kids are traumatized. A lot of, or not, I don't want to say traumatized, because I feel like sometimes we overdo it with the trauma. But a lot of them are clearly holding on to a lot of hurt from their parents, especially their father, and especially the oldest two, like, have some war wounds from growing up with their father that they have carried well into adulthood. The younger ones too, but theirs is a little bit different, where it's kind of like, and this is, it's like that cliche where it's like, oh, the youngest comes and they get babied and like they don't get it as hard as like the older kid probably gets it. And you can kind of see that a little bit with the two younger ones. And there's also like this want to please their father, especially whereas like Troy's like, F him. He immediately, as soon as Joy disappeared, was like, his dad killed her. Like, immediately. She wasn't even going, they didn't even know she was going a straight 5 minutes, and he was like, he knows something, he did it. It's just like wild if you think about it. Especially, oh my gosh, which we're going to put a pin in it, but just talking about the dynamic of Joy showing back up, and when she did, and literally all of your children put your husband in jail and was ignoring him. Like, so much to break down there. But we'll put a pin in it, and hopefully I remember to come back to it. But anyway, so Troy and his whole thing, which is always so interesting with these shows, which deals with a lot of like secrets and things like that and things being exposed, whereas like a lot of the things that they blame their father for actually ended up being what their mom did unbeknownst to them. So them thinking like, oh, he must be having an affair, da da da, where actually no, Joy was the one out here having a whole affair. Oh, Troy holding like this pain, this freaking, how long, many years was this? Did I write the year down? I can't tell. But like, at least decade plus, because they're in their 30s and he was a teenager. So like 20 year grudge against his father for how everything played out. As far as, when he fought Harry was like this kid that he was bringing up because you know their family business was tennis, and so they were coaching Harry ends up growing up to be like this mega star in tennis. And so Stan has blamed freaking Troy for losing that client, because Troy like ended up fighting Harry because Harry was cheating, and it was like his father was not realizing it and wouldn't say anything, so he ended up fighting. And then right after that, Harry's father called and was like, we're gonna pull him out, we're no longer gonna let you coach him. And so the parents ended up needing to let go of their business, because it was pretty much a money pit. They couldn't keep up with it. They didn't have, there wasn't any overhead, so they couldn't afford to like keep that center up. So they end up selling it to someone. And so everything related to like that business, Stan blames Troy for, which is like wild if you think about it. Like, how do you blame your child for something like that? And it's been so many years holding a grudge against your, like, can't even imagine. But anyway, and so Troy has spent the past 2 decades essentially being blamed by his father, feeling the weight of the pressure of it. Like, he literally went off on his own. He has this big fancy job. He's clearly is seeking approval, because you kind of see it with his boss, because his boss is kind of like a replacement father figure. But then also there's still some of that deception that seems to be from the mom, to be honest, after we figure out everything she's done, where he's sleeping with his boss, his father figure's wife, which was just like, oh my gosh. But he also like uses his money a lot to like get out of things, and he throws that out in the open a lot, like, oh, he has the money, he can pay his way out of things and all of that. To be like, oh, I don't, to pretty much be like to his father, oh, F you, I don't need you, I can support myself. Look at how successful I've become on my own. I didn't need you, and you're pretty much failing. I'm pretty much winning. It's kind of like pretty much slinging his junk around in his father's face every chance he can get. But kind of find out his mom was the one who called Harry's parents and was like, oh, you need to pull him out. Which is like, why would you keep that as a secret? Why wouldn't you tell your husband that you did that? Like, granted, they probably wouldn't be married to this day because, like, he was pissed once he found out, which is kind of what led to her disappearing anyway. But she held on to that for 20 years. And my whole thing is like, if you did it because you didn't like what you were seeing as far as like your husband and like how it was affecting like that relationship with between your husband and his kids and all that stuff, especially Troy, I would think that you would at some point come clean about that, but she didn't. And so that kind of blew up when she does eventually relay it. But then on the other end of it, you have Amy, who clearly, like, again, second oldest. So a lot of that, like, I'm the oldest slash a little bit of the I'm the middle child type of syndrome going on here, where she's just literally, it just seems like, can't make anything work. She's very like flighty. We see in her past timeline or past flashbacks that she had a whole suicide attempt, which they don't like blatantly say she tried to kill herself, but from everything that eventually comes out, like that's along the lines of what they're pretty much telling us. And so that kind of like determines kind of where she is. But then you kind of see her coming to her own because everyone kind of like brushes her off or writes her off, and they're like, oh, you, she's, there's something wrong with her, don't pay attention to her. And you see her, especially when she, because she's the whole time like, oh, I think she's alive, da, da, like, or like, oh, we need to look into like this or that, like trying to find her mom. She seems to be the only one truly interested initially in trying to figure out where her mom is. And so it was at that point where they went to identify the body that was found, where she just essentially snapped on her family. It was pretty much like, screw you, you're not going to dismiss me and my feelings. And then we also see her relationship progress with her roommate slash landlord, which that was not surprising. I figured that's where that was going because that's what it was giving the entire time, and that's where they went. And then she had a little bit of, there's a little bit of an age gap where she's older and he's considerably younger because she's like my age, and he's like, I think he said he was like 22. I was like, oh no, throw it away, wrap it up. But you know, she's gonna do it, so there's that. And then Brooke, her issues come through commitment, not being able to commit because she's in this long-term relationship, she's preparing to get married. Savannah shows up, and she then somehow found herself in bed with Savannah and cheating on her longtime girlfriend or slash fiance. And so she also, she, so now we're getting to the younger two, who to me give off up, where the older two are more so like, resistant, do my own thing. Like, you're not gonna tell me what to do, not really trying to like people please, more so Troy than Amy, but like they both give that off. The younger two were more so like, no, like that's my dad, like I'm gonna support him, or I want his approval, like seeking kind of like, don't want to be in that bad light. Because they even say initially when they're looking for their mom, they have Brooke call because it's like, oh, he likes you essentially. And so you see kind of like their relationship, Stan and Brooke's dynamic, because he kind of treats her a little bit like the one of the golden children because she kind of went on the right path. She's doing like physical therapy. Like, he feels like she's being successful running her business, even though like she has her own secrets because she's barely keeping afloat as far as her business is concerned. She's cheating on her fiance with this woman who y'all done let live in y'all house. So she's just like all over the place. So when all of that is exposed as far as like her being a cheater, which was exposed by Amy because Amy was done with the shits. Then that kind of put like a little bit of a crack in her and her father's dynamic. But then we see, especially once everyone starts to kind of, because Troy was already like, he did it, Stan did it, goodbye. Amy was a little bit like, like getting there. Logan was truckling along, because he found that video, so then he had the video, so then he was like, no, like I didn't want to believe it, because he gone cold, didn't want to believe it, and then he saw the video, and he was like, I gotta turn this in to the police. And really, Brooke was the only one kind of like showing up for a little bit until essentially it just looked like Stan did it. And then Logan, he was kind of like who Troy was probably supposed to be, where he did the whole tennis thing, and then I can't remember if he got injured or whatever happened, but essentially he's very much like, was, oh no, dad didn't do it, no, he couldn't do it, but like very much like puppy dog sad eyes every single time. And especially when he found the video and the decision that for him to turn that video in, where it's just like all the way up until that video, he was 100% certain, like, he didn't do it, he wouldn't do it, like there's no way, absolutely not. And then he found that video, he's like, I gotta turn in. He did like a 180 quick, was like no communication. But we also see him dealing with, and it also kind of plays in his dynamic with his parents, because we see his longtime girlfriend, she ends up moving, I think, to like Washington or something like that, for, I think she's like a residency. I honestly can't really remember and didn't write down, but he was supposed to move with her initially, and then he started getting like cold feet, he didn't want to move, and then she pretty much called him out, was like, you're such a baby, like you need to cut the umbilical cord, pretty much, like you literally cannot function without being one throw away from your family. And we kind of see him like grow out of that, and him reconnect with his girlfriend, but also grow out of like needing to be under his parents in that way, and like needing, and now being like, okay, no, I need to branch out and do my own, because like clearly my family's crazy and me staying here is going to hold me back. That's the Eva version of everything. So like that's the family, legit wild top tier wildness. But Savannah, and she plays into the wildest, because it's like, this girl shows up, and they kind of try to set it up in a way where you're like, oh, does Stan have an affair with her? But like, no, actually ends up being Brooke who has an affair with her, not Stan. Even though she tried to get him, and then he was like, she tried to get Stan like later on in the season, and Stan's like, no, there's something wrong with this girl. She needs to go. Because they, for a long time, was just like, oh, she's the best. Like, first of all, this girl just randomly showed up on your doorstep with some wild story. And then your first thing is like, oh, I'm not going to call the police. Oh, I'm not going to try to, like, get you some help or take you back to wherever it is that you came from, or, like, try to help you, or, like, try to put you in a position to figure it out on your own and not involve me. No, let's let you stay the night. Oh, let's let you continue to stay and not kick you out. And this girl becomes entrenched in their daily lives, and to the point where they're not even listening to their kids being like, hey, this is weird. Why is this random woman who none of us knows, who just showed up on your doorstep, staying at your house? Why is she involved in everything? Why does she know so much about us? And again, that goes to Joy being like at this place in her life where it kind of feels like everyone's a little bit abandoned her. Her kids don't pick up the phone when she calls. She doesn't really have any work because they sold their business. And the only one who seems to be paying her attention is this random woman who showed up on her doorstep. And so there, that's where you kind of see like her, well, she trusted her pretty much immediately and was giving her so much the benefit of the doubt. Even when we get to the point where we're getting like closer to the day that Joy ends up disappearing, and they're all watching that tennis match, which Savannah was giving off weird anyway, because it's like, one, why did you pick this house? Like, there was just always like, there is something that she is not saying, because it feels like she scoped this family out, or she picked this family for a specific reason. And so to find out that it was because she was Harry's sister, and then the whole story of like why she even showed up, because her and Harry haven't even talked or lived with each other since 20 years ago when he ends up leaving Stan, as far as Stan being his coach and going to find another coach. Like, his dad took him and like left her with her mom. And so she's essentially has spent the past 20 years blaming the Delaney family for how her life ends up shaping out, because she didn't have a great life living with her mom. And she blames them for breaking up her family, which was just like, girl, that's a long game if I've ever seen one. Like, that is such a long game. But to the point where she showed up ready to just destroy it all, which she kind of did, because you see the explosion that happens when they're watching the match. And then she just kind of like sneaks out and it's like, goodbye. And even then, because Troy ends up offering her that money, and even like the way she was just reacting, I was like, clearly there's something more than this. It's more than just money, but like, no one was picking it up. And she was giving all the signs that this was deeper than money. Even like her questioning about like, oh, what happened with the tennis thing, and like, in knowing and realizing that it was a topic that they didn't really want to talk about, but being persistent about it. I was like, that was giving off weird, but no one was really picking it up. And so, I don't know. I'm just like, in real life, if some random woman shows up on my front doorstep, one, I'm not opening the door. So it's already a wrap, because we're not even opening the door to begin with. But two, there's no way I'm just letting some random person into my house and then offering them a bed to stay the night at my house, and I have no clue who they are. And she ends up being a crazy person who semi-kidnaps your mom and knows that you all are spiraling, and the world thinks that she's dead, but she has her holed up at her little house. It was wild. But anyway, so what else? Because I feel like we went through a lot. I'm just going through like my notes now, like my high level summary notes. So I wrote, there's clearly a dilemma or a delineation. Oh my gosh, the autocorrect on these, like when I'm like watching and trying to type at the same time, I don't catch a lot of the errors. So it gets like autocorrected into weird words. I'm like, what was I saying? But that was supposed to be delineation. Okay, so there's clearly a delineation between the younger two and the older two, which is, I kind of talked about that already. I feel like the kids overreacted, but I also get it. What was that in reference to? Was in reference to... their mom disappearing, or their dad? Or no. I do think... okay, I think I know what this is about or in reference to. I think that's in reference to them all like... No. I was like, what is this about? So the whole, when we finally get to the point in the flashbacks where we see like kind of what caused the rift in the family and why the kids weren't picking up Joy's phone calls. So they're watching like they're watching something. And then that's when Joy ends up telling the truth about what really happened with Harry and why he let Stan go as a coach. And everyone's reaction to that was just like, Troy is valid, because he spent 20 years feeling like the scummiest of scum due to how his father treats him. Like, Troy makes sense. But everyone else, their reactions to me just seemed over the top. Even the one who's sticking out to me is like Brooke being like, Mom, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember what she said word for, but being like, Mom, like it literally felt like she was like, Mom, how could you? Like, that's what she was giving off to me. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is a little much of a reaction from these other three. Like, you ruined his life. It was just like, oh my gosh, you all, it's not that serious. Also, this is 20 years later. Why are we holding this type of a resentment? It's so weird. But then also, like, I get it specifically for Troy, because I feel like he has been the one in the direct heat of things. But then I guess you could say there's a little bit of a trickle effect on the other ones, which kind of shapes how they all end up growing up and their relationship with their dad is based off of like his reaction to being let go as the coach, and then seeing like his protege essentially become like this big thing, and that could have catapulted his business into like some dimension that he didn't even feel was reachable, because that's not where he ended up today. So like, I get it, but also it was real big overreaction. Oh, my other note, I said Joy out there living her best MNF in life. Meanwhile, her whole family is in chaos. Literally, family just falling apart. Husband in jail, kids just Troy out here. Literally, that whole scene where he confessed to his boss it at the job, like, hey, FY, I'm the one sleeping with your wife. I'm the one who gave her that. Troy was bonkers. I was like, oh my gosh, just straight up spiraling. And she's just out living her best life, gardening, meeting random folks. So funny, so funny. And then yeah, so then my final takeaway note is just, and this is true, this entire show boils down to parent-child issues. Like literally, if you wanted to do a case study of parent-child relationships, this is probably one to watch and be like, this is what I should not do. So that was Apples Never Fall. I'm surprised I had so much to say on that, to be honest. But yeah, that was the season. Again, I don't think we're getting a season two. Like, there's no reason to give us a season two. If there is a season two, I will be very, 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 very much surprised. But I do want to know you all's thoughts on Apples Never Fall. Let me know all of the things, and I will talk to you all in the next episode. That's the end of the episode. Thanks for sticking through it to the end. Be sure to follow me on all the social media platforms at Currently Binging on Instagram and at Current Binge on Twitter. Also, hit the subscribe button on whatever platform you listen to podcasts on, and I'll talk to you in the next one.